Hello, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. Hi, Patty. How are you on this Easter Sunday?
I am just fine. Had a wonderful day, and I'm looking forward to our podcast this evening.
Me too. Yeah. So I'd like to take this opportunity. If you are watching on YouTube, please consider clicking the subscribe button down below if you're not subscribed already. Click the bell to be notified when we release new content, which is Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Eastern. We have our Facebook groups, the Paranormalist Podcast, the Paranormalist Group Share, and the Paranormal Asylum. And we also have the email address, paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com, where we will accept your ideas, stories, feedback, comments, whatever you'd like to send us. And those will be treated with the utmost care, as we've said before, and that's hasn't changed.
No. So go ahead.
No, I said with that, I'm going to turn things over to you.
Awesome. And I would like to wish a good night to a viewer who listens to us in Poland. Her name is Alice. And I hear that she likes the stories a great deal from a family member. So I wanted to let her know that we appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Alice, for being a listener.
So now for tonight's episode is about liminal people. Now, I came across this term as I was doing some research, and as best I can piece this together, there is an author by the name of G. Michael Vasey, who is a researcher. He does, in his day life, quantum physics, and he kind of coined the term liminal people. Now, liminal is a term that is often used in psychology or in sociology in particular, meaning an outlier or the limit of. So people who might have certain social views that are way out there might be a liminal person. But in the paranormal, how he's using it is that they are people or experiences, if you will, at the edges of our ability to understand them, and that many of the things we talk about in the paranormal may only be us and or the entities that we encounter going to the edge of the limits of our frame of reference, our time frame. So he talks about shadow people, old hag syndrome, black eye children, ghostly entities, time slips, angels and demons, that all of these just might be where our universe and their universe merge for a second and we see each other, and that we read them as separate entities, separate things, where, and some of them may be good and some of them may be not so good, but that his idea is that they are probably simply where our dimension and another entity's dimension overlap for a short period of time. And he talks about a story that happened to him, and I thought it was a really interesting way to kind of explain it. So he was, as I said, he does quantum physics, and he's fascinated with energy lines. There's energy lines around the Earth, kind of like ley lines, and he would actually locate these energy lines and follow them. Now, he's located in Europe, and he would, as a hobby, start mapping energy lines. So this particular weekend is a spring day. The weather's really nice, and he decides that here's an area where he's been mapping these ley lines, these energy lines. So he goes out to this area. There's an old historic homestead there, and it's all, that whole area is blocked off for a festival that's going on. So he can see people in the distance, but he's using his equipment and following these lines and just kind of minding his own business. And he's going along, and he comes to this little hedgerow, and it's part of what the original estate would have been. So it's sort of sitting out there all by itself without any reason to be there. It just still exists from being planted so long ago. And sitting there on a little folding chair is this old woman, and she's very out of time. She looks like her clothes are a little odd, her shoes are old fashioned, and she has several big plastic grocery bags around her. She looks like she could be 80 years old. And she's just sitting on this little folding stool, resting, except that she's also leaning forward and she's running her hand along the edge of the hedgerow as though she might have dropped something. And as he's standing there, kind of taken aback by her, something about her just caused him to pause. He notices this young couple walking by, and they don't seem to react to her at all. Not a hello or a, are you okay, or anything like that. And a few minutes later, another man walks by in his 40s. Much more probable that this man would be the person who would stop and say, can I help you, ma'am? Right. And he just blows on by her too. So Mr. Vassy, you know, gets his equipment and keeps on going. He's following this line of energy. And as he moves, he stops finally to map it out on a program that he has downloaded to do this. And he decides that he knows the area, so he can't go through the woods because he would be trespassing if he goes any further. He has to go around to the other side where the road picks up again and pick up the ley line there. So he turns around to go back to his car, and it's maybe all of about 3 minutes after he walked past the old lady. And when he gets there, she's still sitting there, which he anticipated, still got her bags of goods, and she's still filling around under the hedges as though she's looking for something. She doesn't appear to notice him at all. So he watches her a couple seconds, and he's thinking, maybe I should ask her if she's okay. And at that point, somebody yells, he glances away, he glances back, and she's gone, just gone. He has no explanation for it at all. There's no way she could have picked up those bags, folded up her little folding bench, and taken off into the woods in that 3 to 4 second span, and yet there she is, she's gone. Well, he's puzzled by this, and goes back to his car, gets to the other side of the highway, and starts to get out and get things sorted out so he could continue following these energy lines. He's thinking, you know, wonder why nobody else saw her. Why did nobody respond to her? Nobody even said hello. And he's, you know, he's just kind of running it through his head as an odd experience. He picks up the ley lines where he anticipated they would be, and he marks it on the map and begins to follow it. And he notices that every few feet there are bird's feathers in a line, as though somebody's leaving a trail for him. So the trail he follows this trail of bird feathers, which is also the trail of the energy line, and he comes to this old building, and the line appears to go through the building. So he steps into this old abandoned building, but once he gets inside, he realizes it's not abandoned. Somebody's using it for storage. They have built these wire caged areas to store something in, and the feathers continue through the building. So he keeps walking a little distance, and then he thinks, well, there's nobody here. What harm is there if me walking through the building and going to the other side? And that's when he sees the man. There's a man standing at the far end of the building, and he steps out into the light. And the man is, for all intents and purposes, he looks like Santa Claus, except he doesn't have the Santa Claus suit on. He describes him as fat, and a fat old guy with a long white beard. And the Santa man steps forward, and he walks toward him, smiling at him. And then there's a snapping sound to Mr. Vossi's left, and he turns and he looks for just a second. When he looks back, the Santa figure is gone. This has really confused him. This is two disappearing figures in one afternoon. So he decides to search all through the building. He's hunting around. He calls out to the person, and there's no luck finding it. And he begins to wonder, what if we're just crossing dimensions with other beings, and sometimes they notice us, and sometimes we notice them, and sometimes they don't. And we're writing into this experience things that don't make sense. And he also grants that, you know, there's a possibility that some of these entities are not pleasant. You know, nobody has really good Hat Man experiences or Black Eyed Children experiences. Things like that. So maybe there are entities that ride into our space and time for reasons, and they're manipulating the dimensions for their own sake. So he calls these experiences liminal experiences. And so I went down through and I started picking out, as he did, he has written a lot of ghost stories, and he said he went down through his ghost stories and he started picking out stories that you could look at as liminal stories. And I thought we would maybe talk about a few of these liminal stories and see how they could be interdimensional or extra dimensional, depending on how you want to look at it, as well as instead of being specifically evil. But also I would like to key into the fact that he also talks about the fact that angels and demon stories could be part of that process as well. They might just simply be shifting dimensions so that we can see them, or inadvertently we see them while that's happening. So let's talk about a couple of the stories.
Okay. I had a question before you continue. Did he mention in what you read about, you know, both of these people that he saw? I'm assuming from what you're describing, he was actually on top of the energy line or the ley line. Did that make them visible, and the other people that he saw were not on that ley line, therefore they could not see the people that he saw?
He doesn't touch on that, but that's a very good point, because I think that would harken back to the idea that there are places that tend to be more haunted, and often there are ley lines involved in these places. You know, there's a series of ley lines that run through Gettysburg, and you find a huge, intense amount of energy in those spaces and a lot of paranormal activity as well. So that's a very good question. He does not. I've read 2/3 of the book. Mm-hmm. And as of now, he has not made that connection.
Hmm. Well, that went through my mind the very first as you were mentioning that. So that's how my mind works. So,
well, no, that's great. That's how it should. I mean, that's yeah. A really good, observation. But, you know, so let's take a look here and see if we can find anything else that's of interest to us. So there's the story that I found, that this woman lives in a regular little town, middle America, and she has a great big old tree in her front yard that partially blocks her view from the street. So one afternoon she's doing dishes and she sees the neighbor walking their dog down the street. And the neighbor comes to the point where the tree is, and she steps, you know, beyond that. So the lady's, you know, fully expecting her to walk beyond the tree and come out the other side, but she never does. So the woman inside the house, she sort of shifts to another view so she can see the street and along around the tree a little more, and there's nothing there. So she steps outside and walks down the street. She doesn't see the woman and the dogs, and there's a straight shot. She knows she didn't come into her yard. She didn't apparently go into the neighbor's yard, because you would have been able to see her once she stepped a little bit away from the tree. And she's like, I have no idea what I saw, but I clearly saw this woman walking her two dogs down the street, straight to the tree, behind the tree, and never came out the other side. And this reminded me a lot of a story I read years and years ago. There was a judge in New York. His name was Judge Carter. And he was not a well-liked man. He was a hanging judge, if you would. This would have been in like the 20s and 30s, I believe. And one night after dinner in New York City, he came out from dinner with his friends that he had been dining with. He said goodbye to them, and he stepped out into the street, walked beyond a carriage, stepped around it, and they were waiting for their carriage to come, their vehicle, and he never came out the other side. To this day, nobody knows what happened to this man. It's a mystery. And I remember reading that story, and I was like, that's so bizarre. And there's several other such stories I came across. I came across this one of a woman who was at a Parks Jungle Gym in her town with her little girl. And she's watching another child playing on the sliding board. And you know how they have those tubes and slides and stuff that go around for kids to climb and slide through. So she's watching her daughter swinging on the swing set, and she kind of keeps looking over at this little girl climbing through the tube. And the girl runs up and gets up into the tube again, and she never comes out the other side. And as minutes pass, the woman's thinking, I wonder if that child got stuck in there somehow. And she's, you know, she's an adult, so she's like, maybe I should, like, go over and just make sure she's okay. And another family comes in, and their children go running up to the slide, and she's like, okay, this will take care of it. She'll come out the other side when the other kids start down it. The other kids go through it, and the little girl doesn't come out the other side. So the woman walks over after she gets her own daughter, and she kind of walks around the slide, and you can see at the joints and the bends and what have you into the slide, there's no child there. And she still to this day has no idea where that child went, but she clearly saw her going up the slide, down through this, came out, did what every other child would do, run back and do it again. And the second time she didn't come out.
Interesting. And this evidently this child had no parent or guardian there to frantically call out for the child after she went missing.
No, the woman actually talks about that. She's like, she tried to figure, like, I don't know if you've done this, but I had three kids. And so, like, you kind of mentally connect these children in a playground to their grown up. You know what I mean? Like, are they really watching them? Are they there with them? Or sometimes there's kids that are just there by themselves. And I was that mom that always had to be there. So, you know, I would notice that stuff. But there was nothing in the paper about a child that disappeared or anything like that. So she couldn't help but wonder, what is it that she saw? And, you know, there were other stories. There was one that I read about a man who was mugged in Chicago. And this was years and years and years ago. And he's middle of the night. He's coming home from having a couple drinks with his buddies, having dinner. And he gets mugged and he gets knocked down and he hits his head and gets up, shakes himself off. He's really rattled. And he thinks, okay. I need to go home and call the cops. It's probably not going to do me any good, but I'm going to go ahead and give it a shot. So he starts for home. He gets to the house and he realizes he lost his keys in the mugging. They must have fallen out of his pocket. So now he's a little frantic. He goes back to the place where the mugging happened. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. He is really frantic. And like I said, it was years and years ago. This is before cell phones. So it wasn't as easy to find a phone to call the police. And he's frantically looking around on the ground where he was mugged, and he sees a man standing in the distance. And the man walks up to the corner and he says, "You're going to be just fine, son." And then he's just gone. Well, it scared him so bad he took off running. You know, what the heck's going on? And he said he stumbled about 4 or 5 feet after he started running, and he looked down and he tripped over his keys. He grabbed his keys and he went home. And he said, I know there was somebody there. I heard him clearly talk to me. And he was telling me that it would be okay. And that's what caused me to take off running and find the keys. He's like, I don't know if he helped me find the keys, but whatever it was something that, although it frightened him because the man just disappeared. On the other hand, he said he had no fear when he was looking at the man. He had no fear that the man was going to harm him. And I found a couple other stories like that. There was a story of a man who was standing on the sidewalk, and he said he noticed a gentleman who had his back toward him, and the man had on work pants and a long sleeve shirt and a hat. You know, it was just an average kind of laborer kind of guy. And he had on and he turned around, and this is when the guy panicked. He said when the man turned around, he had a blue face. There was no structure, just a blue glowing face. And it was maybe 10 feet from him. Said, I got a really good look at him. And then the man just began to fade away, not blink away, but like slowly dissolve. And he said, it shook me so bad that I just stood there for a while in shock. And I can't tell you what I saw, but I clearly saw it.
Yeah. When I hear stories like this, where you see something or these people see something that's probably not of our dimension.
Right.
I wonder most of the time, what are the people from the other dimension seeing? And do they see something similar? Or if they're not surprised, like the people from our dimension would be, to me that indicates some type of intelligence that yeah, they're causing it.
And you see, you will hear stories that, you know, these people seem to notice them, but they're not rattled. But you also hear stories where the being on that you're noticing suddenly realizes you're looking at them and they appear startled or frightened. You'll come across those stories, not as often, but obviously there is maybe a way that they're not aware of us until they see us. Maybe we're ghosts to them.
Well, I mean, and to me, that's like an incidental crossing of the energy lines, whatever it is that can explain this phenomenon, versus someone that seems like they're in control. To me, that would be a deliberate manipulation to make that happen.
Right. And I have to tell you, one of the things I found interesting about a lot of these experiences was that people were usually under stress. Now, I find that interesting because we put out an electromagnetic field and it changes, deepens and intensifies when we're under stress. That's why we're so tired, because it wears us out. And I wonder if that extra electromagnetic field going out, or that energy source leaking out extra energy, allows us to leak into their world or allows them to leak into ours. You know, I think that there are both intentional and unintentional crossovers. It's just, you know, it's fascinating to me that this is a possibility, that we are just simply bumping into people from other dimensions, some of whom know we exist and some of whom don't know we exist. And some of whom I think might actually eat the energy. So I'm going to talk about shadow people for a second under this theory. If I were to say shadow people were liminal in nature, I would say that they are intentionally liminal. And the reason is because when you read shadow people stories, so many of them start out with things like, I was in a really bad time in my life. My parents were going through a divorce, or I was going through a divorce, or I had just lost my job, things like that. And so they're in a bad place and that negative energy is there. And I wonder if they don't sense it. And I truly believe there are entities out there that devour the negative energy, that it feeds them. So this is a story that I came across about a young woman who was a child. Her parents were going through a divorce. She was struggling a lot with that. She was only about 5 years old at the time. And so she was sleeping with her mom in her mom's bedroom. Her dad was sleeping downstairs on the couch because they were going through this really rough time. And she woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and went back to bed. And when she woke up again, there was a man, a shadow of a man, staring at her. He was standing right at the edge of the bed. And she said it felt like an eternity while he just stared, and she was terrified of what he was. She couldn't see him clearly. She said he absorbed the darkness. He was darker than dark. And as she's watching him, he grows in height and almost touches the ceiling. And at this point, she said she didn't know what to do, so she turned and tucked herself in the fetal position up against her mother and laid there until she fell asleep. And the next night she woke up and she felt the urge to walk into the living room, and she saw the shadow man by the front door. It walked over to her after it made contact, like she said she knew it, knew she was there. And it walked over to her father sleeping on the couch. And she said, I tried to wake him up. I tried to scream. I tried to push him. I tried to make him understand. I couldn't make any sound. And he didn't seem to be able to wake up when I was hitting him. And after a few moments, I was just so terrified. I didn't know what else to do. So I ran into my mom's room, climbed up in bed with her, and I hid there again. And I would peek out the doorway because I didn't shut the door, and I could see the shadow person staring at my dad.
I think that would unnerve me too.
It would unnerve me as an adult. I can't imagine a 5-year-old having to deal with something like that. So, you know, that's a terrifying story. Here's another story of a person. So this is an adult male talking about he had a cousin, that family cousin, who was much older, who was staying with his family when he was a kid. And she was staying there for a little while till she could find an apartment of her own for her and her newborn baby. And one night, the child was sleeping in his dad's room. His dad had a single bed back in the corner. And so he and his little brother were both sleeping in the single bed because the cousin was using the boys' room for her and the baby. And he said he woke up and he saw something, a shadow by his dad. And he thought at first it was his brother. And he said, "Go back to bed. Dad'll be mad." And then he rolled over and he realized his brother was against him. And he rolled back and looked at the bed, and he describes it as a black silhouette standing beside the bed. And he said, I didn't know what to do. My heart started racing. This thing got clearer and clearer. It was a silhouette of a person, but not a man, a lady. And he described it as long black hair kind of in ringlets, and it looked wet and shiny, but it didn't drip. And he said, it was terrifying. He lay there for a while until he fell asleep again. And the next day he told his family about it. They all said he was imagining things. He had a bad dream, you know, stuff like that. And every time he'd bring it up, they'd make fun of him. So he quit talking about it. So fast forward about 10 years and his family has moved to another house. And his dad comes in one day and he says to him, "Hey, tell me about what you said you saw back at the old house, you know, when you were a kid, the lady with the black hair." And he's like, okay. So he tells him the story and he's like, I don't know why you want to hear about it now. You didn't believe me. And he said, just tell me everything you saw. So he said about it. He said everything he saw. And he said, oh my God. Oh my God, maybe this is real. And he's like, "Dad, what are you talking about?" Now he's like 19 years old, you know? Mm-hmm. And he sits down on the side of the bed in the boy's room. And he's like, "The new people, the people that bought our house." He's like, "Yeah, they just called me. They said that their kid had seen a lady in black with black hair and that they heard him screaming in his room and they tried to open the door, but it wouldn't open. And the kid began swearing at the entity, telling it to leave him alone. And the next day, they finally got into the room, and the next day they took the child to the priest, and they told the priest what had happened to the child. And he said, it took about a decade, but finally my family believed that I had seen something, because what the child described was a woman with long black ringlets of hair who looked like she was all shiny and wet. In this instance, I think whatever this was, liked the fear. You can tell the difference between ones that appear spontaneously. I think maybe the old lady at the hedgerow was spontaneous and maybe not even aware of the man. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Santa Claus man was aware, but he didn't seem evil. The only thing that the viewer got was that he was jovial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even when you mentioned the woman sitting, you know, with her bags, the first thing that went through my head at that point, well, other than what I've said already, was that she's waiting for a bus.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe in her dimension, that's where the bus stop was. Yeah.
And that very well could be. There's a story from London where on multiple occasions, there's a specific bus stop in one of the older parts of London. I cannot remember the name of it. Maybe one of the listeners will text us, but there's a bus stop there, and there has been so many different types of paranormal events. So there have been people who have walked into the bus stop area or walked into this area, and suddenly they're at a bus stop and it's just a corner, and it looks old-fashioned with an old-fashioned telephone booth and all the stores look old-fashioned, and then, you know, they kind of panic and it feels to them like they've been there for quite a while, an hour maybe. And then a few seconds later, they somehow step out of it and they're back where they belong. And vice versa, there have been people who have seen somebody materialize in front of them looking like they stepped out of, you know, World War II England, or even sometimes earlier. These people appear very confused and then they just disappear. That's fascinating that would be, and it's happened repeatedly. Like I know about 5 different stories from that particular spot.
Very interesting. Yeah.
It is. It's really, really fascinating. So he talks about, like I said, shadow people, hat men, things like that. And I think one of the things we have to recognize is that there's possibly that there are, there are shadows that are spirit energy that dart around. I don't know about you, but have you ever noticed, I know I see them sometimes, like these little things that sort of are darting at the corner of my eye. And when I look, it's like somebody going by, and then you look and there's nobody there. Do you ever have that experience?
All the time. In my house right now, I see former cats that we've had, that have crossed the rainbow bridge, as it were. And I'll see them, but usually it's out of the corner of my eye. Now, occasionally, maybe one time out of 20, I'll turn and look, and yep, there he is.
So I have a story that this was told to me by a family member who worked at a lumber mill. And this is where they take the cut trees to process them into lumber. So there's huge saws, and everybody's very cognizant of certain things. Like there's, you have to be careful of the equipment and what have you. And so that he was working there quite a long time, about a year and a half. And he saw, you would see these shadows going behind the saws. There's like a big scaffolding, and then it would go up behind these saws. And one day he's watching and he sees it. He said, as soon as you'd look at it, it would just disappear. But this one day he's watching it out of the corner of his eye, and he realizes that he can look at it more clearly. So he turns and he's watching it. And this is the first time that he's ever been able to see it hands on. And he said, Mom, for all the world, it was a groundhog. It looked like a little groundhog. And it was just walking along on 2 legs. And he said, I know it sounds insane, but it walked up, turned around and looked at me as if to meet eyes with me, walked behind that scaffolding. And I kept waiting for it to come out the other side, and it didn't. So I walked up and I'm looking around behind it. There's nothing there. And one of the other guys yelled and said, hey, what's going on? And he's like, did you see anything? And he's like, no. He said, no, like a shadow. Did you see a shadow or a groundhog or something? And he's like, no, dude, I didn't see anything. But he said, as long as he worked in that area, he would see that shadow go by and be hurrying, scurrying along. And until that one day when it clearly slowed down and let him see it. And he has sworn by that story for probably almost a decade now.
Maybe Narnia is real.
I don't know, but it's just a bizarre story. Mm-hmm. And he's never backed down on it. So, of course, there may be deceased loved ones, and maybe they don't. I don't want to say this, that there's not a heaven, but maybe heaven is a dimensional thing where we slide from one dimension to another. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Because we're energy, so we can move in a different way than we do with a physical body. And, I know stories of angels that are fascinating as well. There's one story I'd like to share that's a family story. My mother, who was very religious, and so she interpreted this story this way. So my mother had been worried about something, and she would pray at night, every night, for quite a long time, and she was praying over this thing that was troubling her for several days. And it was like 10, 11 o'clock at night. She's sitting in her bedroom, and she's praying and crying and just sort of asking God for assistance with this, because it's something that was way beyond her ability to influence it. And she laid down and went to sleep. Now, she always left the hall light on right outside her door, because she had to go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, and this way she wouldn't stumble. And so she left the hall light on, as always, fell asleep, and about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, she woke up and just had that one moment of absolute shock, because there was somebody standing in the hallway. She couldn't see the person's features, but she could see that black shadow of robes over somebody's form. She got the distinct feeling it was male, but whatever it was so tall that as she lay there looking up, she couldn't see its head and shoulders. They were above the ceiling. And she's just laying there waiting, thinking, you know, trying to make sense out of all of this. And she said the being knelt down and looked at her and smiled and nodded as if to acknowledge that it knew she saw it. And it turned around and walked into the wall and went away. She swore by that story forever. And did it help her with the thing she was hoping for?
That was my next question. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know because she would never tell me what it was.
Oh, okay.
But she was convinced after she had that night, that experience that night, that God had heard it. He had sent someone to acknowledge that and that help was on the way. So I don't honestly know, because when I asked her about it, she would say it was just something really personal, Pat. But she was adamant about that. And then there's one last type of entity I'd like to talk a little bit about. We could do a whole episode on them, but I think it fit well into this narrative. So old hag syndrome. So the old saw is that, you know, your brain comes awake, but your body's not. So it can't move. And so you get that sleep paralysis feeling, and that the rest of this is your brain trying to make sense out of why your body's not able to move. And so you create the impression of the old hag. But every culture, I have to tell you, has stories of these old witch-like beings that literally climb on top of human beings and molest them sexually, if you will, as well as steal their breath. And interestingly enough, it's mostly men. I'm not saying all men, but mostly men. And there was a story that I came across that was really fascinating, because it kind of defines this whole thing. So this was a young couple. They were on vacation. They had chosen to go up to the mountains for vacation, had rented a room in a really nice hotel for about 3 nights. And on the first night in this hotel room, it was one of those suites with a living room, kind of living room area. And then you stepped into the next room, which was the bedroom. And the gentleman woke up and he heard whispering, you know, that sound that somebody talking, but you can't quite make out the words, that kind of sound. And he's laying there and he's trying to move his head to see if there's somebody in the room, and he can't move. And then he hears footsteps dragging across the carpeting, as though somebody was dragging their foot and trying to move close to him. Now he's really terrified because he can't move at all. He knows that somebody's there, the whispering, the dragging of the feet. He tries to tap his wife and wake her up, and she just doesn't seem to be able to wake up. He can't make a sound, and yet he's terrifyingly clear on what's going on. And that's when he sees it. He said a cold hand came down across his face, and fingers began to run through his hair. This being leaned forward and whispered, "Hush, don't struggle." And the panic was overwhelming. He described it as looking like a classical old witch. The old woman leaned on top of his chest and climbed up, and then she began tearing at his clothing. He was panicking. He couldn't move. He was trying to scream. He knew he was awake, but he couldn't make a sound. And he said her smile was evil, as though she was enjoying the fear of his heart pumping like that because he couldn't move. And then suddenly she shifted and the paralysis broke and she disappeared. She just literally disappeared as she stepped off of him. He woke his wife. He was terrified. He's crying, he's screaming. He makes her get out of the bed. They go out to the other room and they decide they're going to pack and go home. Enough is enough.
And what did Mrs. say about that?
She believed him, actually, according to the story, because she had, she didn't have any experience, but she could see the terror that something had happened to him. And I have to tell you, I have a friend who works construction work, and the way this works, he would go to a town and he'll be put up in a hotel for 2 or 3 weeks while they're doing some building on a project. So he would stay there all week, and then on the weekends he would pack up and come back home. And one weekend he looked me up and he said, "Hey, I have been working on this project in DC, and and they've got this hotel that they lease out this one floor for us to stay there all week. And something really awful happened. So he begins to tell me very much that same story. He's laying in bed. It's a room for two. So there's two like regular full-size beds in the room. His buddy's on one side in his bed. And my friend is in the other bed. And the lights blinking from the motel sign outside are bugging him. So he gets up and he puts the drapes closed all the way. And it's not great, but it's better than having them blinking the whole time. So he goes back and he lays down. And when he wakes up a few minutes later, and he said it felt literally like a few moments, he rolled over and he couldn't, he thought he was trying to roll over and he couldn't move. And he said it was in that moment that suddenly there was somebody there. And he described very much the same story. This figure leaned in, sort of chuckled at him, touched him, climbed on top of him. He was panicked and really freaked out. He spent the rest of the week sleeping downstairs on a chair in one of the lounges because he was afraid to be in the room. And he said, "You got to look into this place, man. There's something bad going on there." So, like, you know, that's who I am. I called this place and I said, "Hey, I have a friend who stayed there recently and he had a really weird paranormal experience. Do you guys have like a haunted room or something?" And they immediately knew what I was talking about. And the woman said, "Oh, you must be talking about the seventh floor, the one the construction workers stay in." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's the right one." And she's like, "Yeah, we aren't supposed to talk about it, but like there have been four or five guys up there in like this room 267 or whatever, or 467 or whatever it was." And she's like, "That have had a problem with that room." And I'm like, "Really?" And I'm like, "Which, anybody in the room?" She's like, "Well, no, just the guys that sleep in that far bed, you know, the one by the window." And I'm like, "Really?" And she's like, "Yeah, we have no clue what it's about. We don't think anybody died here." But it was interesting that that she told me that. So then he began asking around and he told the construction company that he wasn't staying in that room anymore. And he's like, "It was fine after I was out of that room. But the guy they put in the room to replace him, to switch, he quit his job 3 days later and wouldn't tell them why."
Now, and when you mentioned this now, the first thing that came to mind was a succubus, perhaps. But those are usually portrayed as very young and beautiful women, not old hags, but I guess succubi get older.
I think that they choose a vestige that's terrifying because they feed off that panic and fear. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I just think it was fascinating. So if you look at it as outliers, things that are dimensionally moving and shifting, I have one last story I'd like to share. So this is about a man and his family that had moved into a house, and they have a German Shepherd dog. And the dog was one of those, was a well-trained dog. It never barked unless somebody was at the house or in their driveway. And so one night he's in this house, you know, they've been there about 6 months. Everything's kind of settled down. And his daughter and his grandson had come to visit for a few days. So they're staying in the spare room. And all of a sudden, the dog wakes up in the middle of the night and it's just barking and snarling and trying to get out the door. So he's not used to the dog acting this way, but he gets up and he's like, "Something's wrong." So he goes out and the dog heads for the bedroom where his daughter and the baby are. He pushes open the door and he sees a figure, what he describes as about 4 to 5 feet tall, with a tall hat, and it was standing beside his daughter's bed, right inside the door, the room. And he said the dog was snarling, growling. The figure had no face, just the blackness. And he said, I had to pull the dog away. So whatever it was physical enough, the dog knew it was there. And he said that the figure walked over to the crib where his grandson, who was only a few months old, had been. And he said, "I wanted to scream at the time and I couldn't make a sound. I just stood there paralyzed." So the next morning he says to his daughter, was everything okay last night? And she's like, well, yeah, now that you're bringing it up, something happened last night that really kind of freaks me out. And she's like, did you move the baby from the crib to my bed? And he's like, no. Why? And she's like, well, when I woke up this morning, the baby was laying beside me, and he was like 6 months old. There's no way this baby could have climbed out of the crib and into her bed. And she's like, the only thing I could think, Dad, is that you came in the middle of the night and moved the baby. And he said, really? And he said, all I could think of was that dog barking, and I could see that figure in the room, and I had to wonder why it had taken the baby and moved it, and what it had planned to do with the child if it wouldn't have brought it back.
And I can't think a barking dog wouldn't wake up a person and or a baby.
Yes, but neither one of them did. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the last of the stories I'm planning to tell for this evening, but I thought it was an interesting thing. Liminal people, literally just shifting dimensions, and we read them wrong sometimes, and maybe sometimes we read them right. And they are negative in some way in attempting to get our attention for their own personal reasons. And then sometimes I think they may just be like that lady. She's just sitting there waiting for something, whether it's the bus or whatever, and then she just blinked out and was gone.
Interesting stories nonetheless.
Yeah. That's my last story for the night, my dear.
Okay. And once again, we want to thank Alice for listening. Hope Alice enjoyed the stories. I know I did. So with that, we'll probably sign off.
Have a good evening, everybody.